those are the ones I'm most worried about, because if kids are being taught that an animal's life is more valuable than their own.
Well, certainly all life is precious, including animal life, but
right.
What you're saying is that it's more, that this information is more being used to it's almost like a cycle, change the kind of mass psychology of the public.
Exactly.
And into playing into this implementation of a new world order.
Right, because what it's going to boil down to, if they are able to continue, is that personal loyalties and personal freedoms must be given up for Mother Earth. That's what they're pushing most. One of the other goddesses that a lot of people worship in the Golden Dawn is Gaia, or Gaia, whichever way you want to call it. I always called it Gaia. And they talked about this in the planning meetings, that they're going to be pushing this more and more Gaia or Gaia worship, literal worship. And Mother Earth is a very, very, very strong psychological force and symbol, because a lot of these, see, this is another thing they talked a lot about, and that's by getting parents, you know, making things more difficult financially for young families in particular, to where the husband might have to work two jobs, the woman has to work, the kids end up in daycare. What it does is make the kids less able to identify with their parents and look more for role models and nurturing outside of their own homes. One of the things that some of these conspirators were hoping to accomplish by that is Gaia or Gaia worship, by having these kids feel a need for a larger-than-life goddess or force or identity that would be a nurturing substance or force to them. The reason I've learned that they also are into the sun so much is because I have learned from therapists that feeling the warmth of the sun, like laying out and stuff in it, is the closest form of physical and emotional nurturing to maternal nurturing. I was really fascinated when I heard that one. So there is some psychological stuff going on here that's quite powerful. And, you know, and I try to stay emotionally detached from a lot of this so that I can look at it and learn about what's going on now and see where it's heading without freaking out, because that does me no good. It does no one else any good, you know? And they're slick. These people are really slick.
Now, do you have knowledge of other parts of the entertainment industry being involved in mind control?
Mm-hmm. Oh, how?
Yeah, and what other parts of the entertainment industry?
Oh, music's a big one. I haven't even touched on that. I was extensively programmed through lyrics and even certain chords. I wish I knew the words for all this. Even a sequence of certain notes, even major chords to minor chords, certain ones, but especially lyrics. Music is a very, very, very powerful way to control a person emotionally in particular. In mind control, MK type mind control, governmental, a lot of survivors, in fact, I've corresponded or talked to, the survivors I've corresponded or talked to, not a single one has not been programmed using music lyrics as well. A lot of times, I still have a bad habit of not catching myself trancing out in time when a certain song will come on that is very, just very triggering for me. The Beatles music was used extensively, more than any other music I know of. Pink Floyd was used a lot too. And this is funny because people from my generation, MK generation, our base movie programming was Wizard of Oz. The next generation was Alice in Wonderland. They used Disney movies a lot, by the way. Whether deliberately Disney is aware of it or not, I don't even want to guess. I don't want to get into that. But it wasn't too long ago that someone found out what I have no doubt, absolutely no doubt, was an actual program where a Pink Floyd song could be played along with the Wizard of Oz movie, and everything fit step by step by step throughout the movie.
Right.
Pink Floyd music was used a lot in NASA programming because, again, it affects a person's sense of time. All the songs that they had about time, it makes you feel like you're tripping in the first place to listen to most of their music. The Who, especially their opera Tommy, was used a lot on me too. And there are many others. It would take me a day to tell you all the different songs and lyrics and such.
Do you feel that these musicians or producers of this music were somehow knowledgeable of what was going on?
Okay, you start with the lyricists, okay? I mean, if they're coming up with this stuff themselves, they have to know something, okay?
But is it possible that the programmers could have just used songs?
Yes, that's absolutely possible, too. I mean, you look at it, a lot of times MK victims will, especially if they're artistically creative, whether it's music, writing, art, whatever, their programming will bleed through. That's not good words. It will come through subconsciously sometimes in all of this. So it is possible some victims are programmed and the programming comes out in the music. Now, I have heard from several sources that Elton John is an MK victim, and that may be why some of his lyrics are so loaded with this stuff. I don't know. We'll see.
Do you feel Pink Floyd were somehow knowledgeable of these mind control techniques as well? They were cognizant of what they were doing?
I don't know, because I never met them.
Uh-huh.
I really don't know on that. I just know that it worked really well.
That seems to be
like,
quite an coincidence with that soundtrack in the Wizard of Oz film.
That was absolutely no coincidence whatsoever. Well, I mean, it was so right down the line all the way through. And Wizard of Oz is a long movie, okay? and for this to be a coincidence, I'd like for someone to figure the odds on that one. Probably 1,000,000 to 1, okay?
I'd like to ask you about this film that has just been released entitled Conspiracy Theory, which is about a mind control slave.
Oh gosh, yeah.
What was your response to the film? I understand that you have seen it.
Yo. I had a total meltdown after I came home from that movie. I was really shocked at the information that was in there. I have to say this. I love Mel Gibson, physically and every other way. And my husband understands, okay? So I was really delighted that he played the assassin in that movie. It really did help me as far as showing, and it was a verification for me, even though it was a movie, how it's not a shameful thing to not remember what the heck just happened when a person's been reprogrammed or drugged or whatever, because some of these drugs are very powerful at wiping out memory. And yes, I have had hallucinatory experiences as well during scrambles. That was a verification for me, and I understand that Walter Bowart was a consultant for that movie, so that made a lot of sense there. I guess one of the things that there was a couple things that bothered me, and they may have been minor things, but like where it showed the uncle of all the agencies that was trying to help him get out, and how they treated him so well and all. I've yet to find a survivor who's had such a pleasant experience with any of these agencies. I wish one did exist that was so benevolent. The way it showed that the guy that played Jonas, where it showed that this guy Jonas, who was Gibson's character's programmer, being like, oh, a rogue or something like that,
right.
That he was setting up an operation using these guys that was not really connected to any agency anymore.
A loose cannon.
I thought that was pretty misleading because agencies are very much using MK survivors. Victims, I shouldn't say survivors. I did like the way that, I've watched La Femme Nikita, or Nikita La Femme, whichever it is. I've watched several other movies, including the Long Kiss Goodnight, where it showed people who were supposed to be used as assassins by governments, La Femme Nikita, I believe that was France, the other one was here, U.S. It made them look very, not inhuman, but like, you know, knock, knock, nobody's home, or like, you know, they could do superhuman things almost. In real life, it's not that way. In real life, a lot of times, the victims, you know, when they're not actually doing ops, they are total victims, totally at the mercy of their handlers, not knowing from one minute to the next if they're going to live, if they're ever going to be normal again mentally. So I really like the way Gibson's character showed, you know, the vulnerabilities that MK victims really do have. I also like the happy ending, and I I hope a lot of us get to experience that eventually. I don't know. I got a number of contacts this last week, particularly about that movie. A number of MK survivors went to see it just to see, you know, how if there was any triggers in there or anything that would help them with their own recoveries. And I think their biggest concern was that, like with X-Files and like with Long Kiss Goodnight and several other movies and TV shows, it would make people think that we were getting our memories from these movies and shows. Now, I want to specify that I started remembering this stuff back in 91. A lot of other survivors, I have strongly encouraged them to write all their memories down in hand and then type it and store it on diskettes in a number of places so that they have proof that they remembered this stuff before they ran into these types of external materials or shows or whatever.
Right.
So there is a concern there. But I also talked to a therapist who seems to see it as like an open door in the minds of many people in the public to understand that, yes, this stuff can go on, does go on, and how it is done. So there's a lot of mixed reactions in me and in other people in the survivor community about the movie, and I think it's going to take a while to see, you know, what develops out of it. I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it, and most of the time I enjoyed it. And I thought it was just very, very well done.
Well, I was going to ask as well, what in a larger sense do you feel the effect of this film is going to be on the public's perception and knowledge of mind control?
Well, I think it was one of the most accurate things I've seen done yet on it, as far as the way things really are. So I think it was very, very, very helpful that way. Showing that, yes, people do such heinous activities with other human beings, yes. Like I said, the only thing that concerned me was they made it look so limited that very few people were doing it and very few people were victimized by it. And that was what concerned me the most.
Was there
The other concern I had was that, thank goodness at the end, they showed that this wasn't so, but through a lot of it, the guy that played the programmer named Jonas, he was trying to make it look like Mel Gibson's character was dangerous. And that has been stigmatism that a lot of former assassins have run across, like they'll be dangerous again. And that is not accurate, because once a person has dealt with their rage, which is how they are usually used to do assassinations, is triggered out and focused on specific targeted individuals, once that rage has been dealt with, they're pretty neat people. And even while the rage is being dealt with, they are neat people. And they're very, very big assets to society. So showing an operative in such a humane way, I think, was a help to people with Delta programming in particular. I do wish that they had shown more about this character's childhood. They did allude to it several times, like when he talked about the weird school he had been to. It showed how he would switch to a little boy. But I wish they had brought that out more. You know, that most MK assassins, or Delta-programmed MKs, have child altar states, and sometimes the child altar states are the parts that are called out to kill, because they have such pure, unswerving determination to do it. With sometimes the child parts have the most rage of all. So I wish there had been more information, but again, there simply wasn't enough time to put all that in there.
I think the biggest thing that bothered me about the whole film was the title itself, in that that term is used in such a dismissive way, and for the public to then come across any other information about mind control, to kind of label it, oh, that's conspiracy theory, it's not happening, it's not real.
Point there. I guess that didn't hit me, because this is, okay, a therapist who's been working with me asked me to go see it and warned me in advance about the gory parts, which helped. Although it really was surprisingly not gory at all as far as I was concerned, and I was very grateful for that. But she said, now, I want you to learn from this film what is paranoid and what is real fear. And at first I was really thrown off by the way he played an extremely paranoid person. And yet, towards the end, you realize that it all had a purpose and it all was legitimately based. Mm. So I don't know. People would have to know more, I think, to catch that, to understand that that may have been part of the message. I guess that was one of my concerns, too. People, if they're not educated, like, okay, one survivor went to see it in another state and said that the younger people were laughing at it most of the time, like it was a big joke. And she was very disturbed about that. I don't know. We're just going to have to see. It's going to take a while to see what kind of impact this has all across the board.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people that are not familiar with all of the issues around mind control, such as dissociation, that I don't think they would have gotten the full amount out of that picture.
Yeah, that's the main reason why I wish it had shown how he was programmed as a child.
Right.
You know, I wish it had shown that, because then it would have made even more sense.
Kathleen, how do you think society has got to deal with this issue of this use of mind control for political and military purposes that seem to be corrupting society in a very profound way?
That is a huge question. I shouldn't think a lot about all this stuff. Sometimes I think if I were God, or if I were Queen, a monarch, you know, which is a little joke there, what would I do? I wish that there was, okay, one of the things I've seen that happens anytime there's an investigation into this stuff, and I'll bring up more about that shortly, is that what they tend to do is put their people in the leading up the investigation to where they'll allow so much information to come out, but not the rest. That seemed to have happened during the mid-1970s when they were investigating the CIA, MK Ultra, and other illegalities, including assassinations, which, of course, the CIA denied. Mm-hmm. Except they admitted they tried to kill Castro, which Ted Turner is now best friends with, from what I understand. Mm. Strange world. I know that Chavusti,
yep.
And Lynn Moss Sharman, I know that they are starting a real push to get an investigation DC level done into these illegalities. I have agreed to join that push. I understand that Lynn Moss Sharman is also starting a letter campaign and asking people to write their senators and other people in DC about, you know, pushing for the investigation. I guess my only concern is I know so many senators and others that have tremendous influence there that, you know, if I were God or whatever, I would set it up to where younger people, newer people in the Congress and such would be the ones to head up these investigations, people who are not so compromised. We'll see how far that goes. I guess, I don't know, we'll just have to see. I think that one of the things that happens a lot of times is people get so totally overwhelmed, which I'm sure they will if they hear or read this, and I apologize in advance, but this is like a one-shot deal for me to get all this information out at once. It's very overwhelming. If people are willing to accept the information, it is incredibly depressing for a while. It leaves them with feeling hopeless. And believe me, every survivor that has had to remember these things has also gone through these long-term struggles. But I think if people learn to just deal with this information one piece at a time, get away from it for a while, do fun things, just recreate their minds in other ways, and come back to it, learn a little bit more, and then begin to look for more materials on these subjects. Information is available. There were several articles that came out during the hearings on MKUltra and all, but not enough. But they are out there if someone's willing to research it. I think that the youth on up to adults need to be aware of what happened. It seems like this information is still suppressed in the mainstream media. That deeply concerns me. Now, I'm not saying a lot of the people who started up NASA are dead, okay? A lot of the people who taught CIA and Pentagon personnel this stuff are dead. A lot of the stuff is now being carried on by people who are criminally involved, partly, at least partly by choice in all of these activities. But I think people need to be more educated and aware of how this influenced so much of this, the Nazi influence. I think that will help them to understand the historical progression of this, because then it's not such a shock. And then there is a reason to feel outraged and do something about it. Now, I want to say this, too. I am part German. I am proud of it. I am not anti-Teutonic belief systems or anything else. But I also believe that when a person immigrates to this country, as I do, I appreciate what's here, okay, and do not try to overthrow it. A lot of these people that did immigrate from Nazi Germany subscribed to Hitler's plan for world domination by the year 2000. There is a videotape that I found in Blockbusters that did verify that information. Now, what was interesting to me about that was there was no way Hitler could have lived that long, and yet he made that their goal. I've noticed with some of these people, they are so identified with the Nazi belief system that they will die promoting these plans. That is awfully scary to me. One young woman I knew in Atlanta was going to meetings there, very covert meetings, attended by young people with like skinhead affiliations, where there was, and I had several other witnesses verify this, that there was an actual leader, an adult, that was meeting with them, coming over from Germany each week to meet with them and teach them the Nazi belief systems. I know young people who are skinheads, and I love them dearly, but I do not agree with their politics. And I do believe that there needs to be more information made available, and I do believe there needs to be hearings into the situation. Some of the people who are in the military and are in, like let's say they were involved in certain activities and intelligence agencies and realized what was going on, they are very vehemently opposed to this Nazi stuff, and it was supposed to be part of Operation Clean Sweep, but I don't think it worked. I think there's been too much cover-up because of the connection to the CIA, to NASA, and all the rest, where they got their information from. What I would like to personally see is for these people just to start coming clean. And this is my personal opinion, and my personal opinion only. I think that there needs to be a time where some of these people are granted amnesty if they will fess up, and if they will make some kind of reparations for what they've done to survivors. A lot of survivors need information in order to heal. They need verification, and it is available, and I would like to see that happen as well. Now, some survivors would be extremely upset with me for even suggesting such a thing, and 2-3 years ago I would have too. But when I see how many people are dying or close to dying because of a lack of verification, is it worth holding on to that anger for, you know?
Do you think it's better to get the information out and to provide some kind of amnesty for the perpetrators rather than holding out to try to get some real justice.
Right. But I think that they should be made to serve some kind of reparation to survivors, whatever form. I think that they should also be strongly induced to get into some kind of therapy, personally. The other thing I really would like to see is for people to start understanding the needs of survivors presently, besides the need for verification. Just yesterday, I got the New American Legion magazine. My husband is 30 years retired airborne, so we keep kind of close to what's going on in that area. There was an article in there by a psychiatrist up in the Northeast who had been a young victim in a concentration camp in Germany. He just barely survived when the Allies came in and began giving them food and medical and psychiatric help. It broke my heart to read the shape he and his friends were in. He said that after they were released from the concentration camp, they walked for nearly a day down a road with no food, totally exhausted, in a total daze, I'm sure, probably in severe shock. They saw, it was a soldier using a bayonet to get some food out of one of his rations. The soldier saw them and gave him their food. The three men divided this one ration between themselves because to them it was survival. The soldier saw that and got some of the other soldiers to feed them from their rations as well. They gave of what they had for them so these other people could survive. I think that if a lot of people would just be willing to give a little bit of their time, of their energy, of their willingness to learn, even though it is painful and frightening and depressing information, they don't have to risk their lives for this. A lot of people are afraid to associate with some of this stuff because they're afraid they're going to die or get hurt or their kids will get hurt or something. But if it doesn't take a full fledged devotion to helping us, to help us. A lot of survivors were not taught basic life skills. They were not taught how to socialize. A lot of them are financially struggling. They're just barely making it. Some of them cannot even afford therapy, which is essential for their recovery. Some of them seriously need to get a higher education. I'm very fortunate. My husband is 100% VA disabled because he has a deteriorating spine from over 300 parachute jumps in airborne. And so because he's 100% disabled, I have received, without realizing I was going to get it, what a joy. The government is still good for something. 4 years, free education in college. And this is so incredibly helpful to me because I am now able to build a future. I would eventually like to see some kind of scholarship set up. Whether it has to be done by the private sector until survivors get what they deserve financially for what they've been through so that other survivors also can begin to rebuild their lives. A lot of us, until we got out, that's all the life we had. I used to joke when I started remembering what I was used to do that, well, heck, I could always farm myself out as a bodyguard. But do I want to do that? You know, do I want to have to put myself in a risky situation again? I want to have other options for my future. I want to have much healthier, adrenaline-free options for a job or whatever. Now, I realize that because I go public, it's going to limit what I can do. But still, at least I have options. At least I can get an education and be around normal people and learn how to live a normal life. So many others are not as fortunate as I am. I would very much like to see them at least get funding for therapy, decent therapy, and for some kind of education. Some of them, like I understand in Canada, it's harder for some survivors to get therapy and or to get any kind of regular financial support. It's almost impossible for some of these survivors to be able to function on a job. Most of us suffer not just from dissociative disorders, but we also suffer from PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and believe me, that is hell. Any Vietnam vet and a lot of World War II vets can tell you what that's like. So those are the things I would like to see accomplished, at least short term, until some of the other situations with our government can be ironed out.
Kathleen, I'd like to thank you very much for joining us in this radio series. I realize that talking with us here is not without risk to you.
I've had a couple things happen to me and my family this week, but actually we've gotten kind of used to it.
I just wish you all the best.
Thank you. Thank you. And I wish you the same. You took a serious risk doing what you're doing, and I have tremendous respect for you for doing this.
You've been tuned into CKLN 88.1, The International Connection. That was the final part of an interview with Kathleen Sullivan, a former U.S. government mind control victim. Next week, we'll be starting the Fun Fest next two Sundays, and we're going to be giving away copies of this radio series, different tape packages that you can pick up.